Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. It's taken a little while, but I finally got everybody's schedules coordinated so we could get on the show. I've been wanting to have Reverend Guitars on for quite a while. A couple of years ago, JP had picked up an Eastsider, one of the Eastsider guitars, and brought it in. He said, "You got to try this out," and it sounded really great. And so I we got to get him on the show. And so I got everybody and more. So tonight my guests are Ken Haas, who is one of the from Reverend Guitars,
the CEO,
and then also three artists here that are here. JP's is who helped me put this together. He's here from Incendio and Carbe Duran. And Jeffrey Marshall's here, who's been on the show before demonstrating Kemper from Bleeding Heart. And he's a teacher over at Musicians Institute, but a killer player. And we also have Jamal Wade Hines from a group called Hudost.
Yes, sir.
And I think another session guitarist based in...
Hello.
There he is. I got them on the line from back east. And then another guitarist friend of mine who's a singer-songwriter, Jim Muskie, is hanging out with us. He just... I saw him today, and I said, "Come on over, check this out." And he's been blown away by the guitars so far. So anyway, I just want to welcome everybody. And real quick, let's talk a little bit about the history of Reverend Guitars, Ken, if you can talk about how it came to be.
Sure.
And we'll go from there.
That sounds great. I will do my best to keep this short, because 20 years, and 20 years to condense it down is... it's funny, I've been asked to do this a lot over the past few weeks as we celebrate our 20th anniversary here in 2017. Reverend was founded in 1997 by a gentleman by the name of Joe Naylor. And Joe he founded Naylor Amplification in the early 90s and gained some notoriety with an amplifier called the Superdrive 60, which is still fairly... sought after in collector circles. Really neat rig, and he has a really, really good ear for guitar sound in live performance and mid-range and amplifiers and things. And he did that company through the mid-90s, and he eventually sold it out to his partner, who sold it out to a gentleman down in Texas who is still making some of the Naylor stuff to this day. And Joe is a graduate of the Roberto Venn School of Luthry out there in Tempe, Arizona, mm-hmm. and Joe really just wanted to build guitars. And he had his own vintage sort of buy-sell trade repair store for a number of years in the East Detroit area, and he got to sort of screw around with multiple brands through, you know, doing repair work and experimentation, and he came up with things that he liked about certain brands and things that he didn't like about other brands, and there were things that he thought some brands had right and others, you know, were missing the mark on. And so he sort of took all of his years of experience in doing that, and he came up with his own design, which was a sort of a unique body construction that we launched this company with a patent on. And it was for a non-traditional electric guitar body, where the outside was a one-piece mold-injected plastic ring, and the tops and the backs were like a phenolic wood material, like a sort of a press board or countertop, I guess, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically we took these bodies and we put on a 25.5-inch scale bolt-on maple neck, and Joe designed his own pickups, and we made this guitar between 97 and around 2005. And they were really cool, but they were also a little bit confining, I think, for Joe as a creative person. Like, we had this great guitar, and it did, like, one thing really, really well, because all of the guitars were semi-hollow, but they were never really aggressive enough for rock. They were never really bright enough for country. And so to sort of expand our market turned out to be a little bit difficult because of the confines of having this body build. But the whole idea behind it to begin with was there was no paint in the construction of the guitar, so we could just make these bodies here in the Detroit area.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we started getting our necks and our pickups from this from a factory in Korea called Mirror Music, M-I-R-R. As time went on, I and the company started getting more notoriety, I guess, and we started getting some pretty decent level players in the late 90s and early 2000s that were using those guitars. Ron Ashton from the Stooges was a Naylor amp user that had such a firm belief in Joe and what Joe did, and he was an Ann Arbor guy as well. Joe was born and raised in Ann Arbor. That Ron sort of came with us, and when the Stooges reunited, that got us a lot of stage. Kid Rock held a Reverend on the cover of the American Badass record, and that got us a lot of play, because that record, I think, I don't know, if you listen to it, it went platinum like 17 times or something. Listen to a Kid Rock song, you'll find out how many times it went platinum. and then of course, we really hooked up with Rick Vito and started doing some really great stuff with Rick. And Rick is, of course, just a slide-playing legend. I mean, John Mayall's Blues Breakers, Jackson Brown, Bob Seger, and then went on to be in Fleetwood Mac for a number of years, and he still plays in McFleetwood's Blues Band. And so we had some artists that were involved, but we still wanted to do a little bit more with it. And so Joe had some ideas starting around 2000, like I said, around 2004, 2005. He had some ideas for some solid body guitars, and so we went to the factory that was doing our necks and pickups, and we had them make up some prototypes of some solid bodies. The original models were the Jetstream and the Charger and the Warhawk and Club King. And we brought over some prototypes of some guitars that Joe had designed, you know, on paper and pencil kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, you know, calls me and he's like, you know, hey, come in. I want, at the time I was just doing outside sales for him a little bit. I started going to trade shows with Joe in 99 and guitar shows and such like that, 'cause I was good at talking to the public and I really enjoyed selling to guitar players. And so I was to the point where I was doing five or six guitar shows with him a year. And then in 2004, when he launched, 2005, when he launched this new line, I came in and got a couple of the guitars and took them out and started gigging them. And, you know, I liked what we did originally too. And at first, it's like one of those things, you know how guitar players are resistant to change, you guys? Mm-hmm.
We were just discussing that before we went on the air, that exact point, yes.
Yeah, and even at first I was like, boy, I don't know, Joe, you know? And then I started taking these guitars out and playing with them, and I was just floored.
Oh, I just lost him.
He was so floored, in fact, that we lost him.
He was here. Let me dial back and get him back.
Really then, floored.
Yeah, and then while he's going, that point was made. I mean, I think people are used to the traditional Stratocaster, the Fender or Gibson. I mean, even when PRS came out, the scale between Fender and Gibson, everybody really kind of took sides. And you know, it's like Slash only plays Gibson, so people will gravitate to that. And we are reaching the point where hopefully new designs, new pickup configurations, different things like that. It's not about reinventing the wheel. You can only go so far. I think even Billy Corgan referenced that in his the interview about the signature model he did with them last year. But it's really optimizing every single
there we
day.
Go.
You're optimizing every
sorry,
single
I lost you guys. I don't know what the
it
story
just
is.
Dropped, but I got you back. So I'll just keep dialing. If you drop, I'll keep dialing back.
Well. You know, I'm talking to you guys from lovely, sunny, beautiful Toledo, Ohio, where we're currently in the midst of getting an inch of snow and ice.
These things happen. It's all good.
Yes.
So it all grew from that particular
right
set of circumstances. People dug it.
Yes. Right.
Oh man.
Yes, and so here we are, and the initial reaction to these guitars was so good that we started picking up more artists, including, you know, we very quickly brought Pete Anderson on board. And then, of course, the guitars did so well that it ended up bringing me on board full-time. I came on as the sales director in January of 2006 after a really successful NAMM show. And then in 2010, my wife Penny, who runs this company with me, and I bought the company from Joe and hired him back as a guitar designer so that he could concentrate on doing the thing he did the best while we sort of ran the business and the sales aspect of it. And then in the last 7 years, of course, I think Joe has done the best work of his career as far as design is concerned, with the launch of the starting with the Rick Vito model and then all of the basses that we're doing, and then culminating in the Descent baritone and the 12 string and the Billy Corgan model, and moving on to the Mike Watt model that we have coming out at this show, and now I mean it's hard to believe looking back on 20 years of working with this company. You know, it's been crazy. So that's sort of a general overview. You know, if there's anything you want me to get more specific about, I'm happy.
Well, let's do this. Let's one of the guitars, and we're seeing some stuff that's going to be featured at NAMM, so we're getting kind of a sneak peek from Reverend. Jeffrey has right now, he has the Double Agent 20th anniversary. So real quick, explain about this guitar, and I'm going to have him play. Let's hear these guitars, and then we'll get into the electronics, the pickup, sure, the design. So just give me a little rundown of this 20th anniversary and what's unique about it, and just kind of break it out for us.
The Double Agent model. Oh, thank you very much. The Double Agent model has been in the line since 2006, and mm-hmm. we called it the Double Agent because of the humbucker in the bridge and P90 in the neck, and Joe just thought that was kind of a clever play on having the two different styles of pickups in one guitar. And of course we weren't the first to do that, but we were the first to really do it on in a non-limited edition kind of a way. And in that time, the Double Agent probably has been the best-selling guitar of the year, maybe 5 of the 10 years that we've had it available. We currently offer it in two configurations. We offer it in a hardtail, where the bridge is a tunematic bridge, and your bass contour control, the third control out, is in the upper bout, and then we offer it with a Wilkinson trem. We've been using Wilkinson off and on for 12 or 13 years. I think they make a great piece of equipment.
Totally
there.
Agreed, yes.
And so when it came time to pick a guitar to celebrate our 20th anniversary because of the success of the Double Agent model, that was sort of a natural fit. So what we did was, we spruced it up with a flame maple top, and we did 4 new colors for it, including a new that natural flame maple that you guys are looking at there. Plus, there's a sky blue flame maple that's just gorgeous. And then put a brushed aluminum pickguard on the guitar, which we introduced with the Billy Corgan model last year, which was received really, really well. And it's modern looking. Without looking funny on a guitar that has vintage styling. I think it's just a really classy look. And then we added a Railhammer Hyper Vintage pickup at the bridge. I'd kind of like to talk about the Railhammer for just a second.
Go ahead.
That's another one of Joe's patents. What we've done with this guitar, and the easiest way for me to explain it, what started the whole Railhammer thing in Joe's mind was basically metal, because blade style pickups have been around for a really long time, and the reason why they work so good for like high gain rhythm picking is the blades take a very small slice of the magnetic string, that magnetic field that the string generates, and so on your wound strings, if you're chunking a rhythm, I like think about how great somebody like. Yeah, even if you're not a fan, it doesn't matter. Somebody like Dimebag Darrell has such a large, percussive, low-end rhythm sound.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, and guys that played like that with those pickups. But the problem with those pickups is because of the thin slice of the magnetic field that the blades take of the strings, when you get to the high strings, they get really shrill and whiny. And so what Joe did was Joe had this idea to compensate for that by putting Alnico slugs underneath the plane strings. So to allow the tightness in the bottom end, yet still get a chimey top end. And once he did this with some really high output pickups, because, you know, again, we were looking at metal with these things. The byproduct is, of course, I play thumb and finger style in a couple of the bands that I'm in, and I realized really quick the bass notes never get muddy with those blades under the wound strings. And you can play like rhythm parts on the neck pickup, where a lot of times, like a traditional, you know, PAF style pickup will start to get muddy or whatever in the neck. This doesn't get muddy, but it doesn't sound harsh or brittle either.
Yeah.
And so we're winding a few different versions of that pickup, just in different outputs and with different, you know, accents and in the EQ range or whatever. But the pickup that we've chosen for the 20th anniversary is the Hyper Vintage style pickup, which is sort of a medium output pickup that's designed to replicate what would be a hot PAF style pickup, basically. And I know that, you know, Jamal loves it, don't you, Jamal?
I do. I've been becoming one of my quickly becoming one of my favorite guitars, and will probably be one of my main ones I'll be playing.
This is very interesting to me, because as I told him, I was not able to experiment with this guitar just as much as I wanted to. And the thing that came to mind immediately, and we don't want to get to Jeff kind of playing it, is articulation. I have a 335 at home, 335, and I plug this guitar in, and I go, is this speaking like I think it's speaking? And then I went back to my 335, and I love that 335. It's great. It's full and mushy, and really, it's a great, great sound. But I was like, man, every note really speaks from top to bottom. The chord, the first thing I tried, it was, you know, Tom Petty's You Wreck Me, when you just, those big open chords that just sound ringy and kind of cool. It's like, how is this guitar getting that sound and also so well articulated? And I'm thinking for Jamal, because Jamal has so many different effects and delay things that he creates this beautiful wash that I would think now. Part of what Jamal is possibly enjoying is the fidelity of that pickup and how clearly it translates all of his pick moves and all of his hand movements and all that. Is that generally accurate, Jamal?
Yes, I would say so. And I love the tremolo on it too, as he was mentioning
the
earlier.
Wilkinson, yeah,
it can get really expressive with that on the leads and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can be washy and clear at the same time now.
That's the thing. That makes sense based on a pickup. Yeah.
Well, let's. So I'm going to ask Jeff to give me a blowout sound, and then do like a chunky thing on the low end where the blade is, and then scream up on the top.
You got some sound there?
Okay, yeah, let me get you on.
There he is.
So that's the blade. Now it's going up on top. So it's got articulation all over the register. I mean, he was doing the chunk thing, but he was also playing fast, and you can hear the clarity. I mean, that's a lot of gain on there.
Yeah.
Now, we're using a Kemper, and we're running a direct, but he has all the models on there, and it just sounds amazing.
What about cleaning it up just a little bit? What kind of things can you do with that?
Like our hair, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, like a non-distortion, kind of like a...
Like a real clean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get really chimey with it.
So it has it's got a nice clean humbucker sound. It's definitely a humbucker.
But really full and nice. And then the bass contour, that's something that we'll listen a little bit of that and then explain, if you will, what that decision was to put that in, because it's a really cool feature.
Yeah. Nice and clear.
Is that with the roll up, with the contour full up? Or?
Let me. That's without it.
Ah,
and
see?
Here's with it.
Much fuller than you're almost heading back to a more clear single.
You're getting like lower mid stuff in there.
That's without it. I'll roll it in. You can hear it roll in too.
It's almost like as you dial it down off, it makes it almost like it's more single coily. It's not that humbucker fullness.
Was that the idea with that, Ken? Is to generate more of a single coily sound, or?
Yeah. Without having to result to coil taps. You know, I always thought that when you split the coils in a humbucker, you take a pickup that sounds really good as a humbucker, and then you make it do something that it's not really designed to do. The bass contour thing, we sort of stumbled on through artist need. I mentioned earlier we worked with Ron Ashton from the Stooges for a lot of years, and we used to make and Ron is a notorious he was a notorious Strat player, and he really liked the thin bridge pickup into a high gain Marshall thing. And if you think of the Stooges, you're like, well, yeah, that's what that was, that buzzsaw, you know?
Yeah.
And no matter what we did with the original Reverend model that he was playing, the semi-hollow one, we just couldn't get that guitar to be bright enough. And so Joe had the idea to sort of reverse engineer a tone control to remove low frequencies instead of removing high frequencies, to basically thin out, you know, our bridge pickup for Ron. And once he, you know, so he just screwed around with a bunch. It's totally passive. And we screwed around with some different, Joe screwed around with some different capacitors. I say we. Such a company man. Joe screwed around with a bunch of capacitors until he found the thing that worked. And then, of course, when we tried it on humbucker guitars, we realized that, wow, you can really approximate the sound of a single coil pickup and remove some of that woof from the low end of a humbucker. But the neat thing about it is both coils are still on, so you're still bucking hum, even as you roll it off.
Yeah, because sometimes, depending on the guitar and amp configuration, one of the things with humbuckers, sometimes it can get really mushy and flabby on the low end. Yeah. Part of it's the limitation or whatever, the amp or the speaker. So, you know, that's variable, so you don't have to turn all of it down. But you can dial it up to tighten the bass.
If you're in a situation where you're playing with a rig that you're not familiar with, you know, you're going to an open mic or something like that, and you get up on stage and the rig sounds a little woofy or something to you, I mean, boom, it's right at your fingertip to correct that. And another really cool thing that you can do with that control is I just picked up a bunch of vintage gear last month. It's a long story, but I ended up doing some of this stuff, and I'm selling a whole bunch of vintage amps right now, and I got this really cool amp. It's a 1950, made between 52 and 54 by Valco. It's called a Bronson Melody King. And this amp is like this, has this crazy gain stage because it was made for these super low output pickup steel guitar things. And anything that you do with the volume control on this amp over half, it starts to break up. And when you crank it, it sounds like Led Zeppelin 1, you know, through a single 12, 15-watt amp. It's just awesome sounding. And Jamal, did you get to play with that when you were in the shop?
I did not.
I
wish I did.
So with the bass contour, you can crank an amp like that, and roll off the bass contour.
Not have it mush out. Yeah, wow.
Because as you roll in the bass, then you're overdriving the bottom end of the amplifier, and it gets more distorted. So with the single channel amps, you can do just crazy cool things with the bass contour that I just don't think are available. You know what I mean? To have right at your fingertips. I think we have something that's kind of unique there.
You know, before we kind of come back to the E-Sider and we'll still talk a little bit more about this, you've also got, obviously, the P90. And there's a really cool, like, the P90 sound itself and the mixture of the two is such an interesting, cool sound. If Jeff could do a little bit of that on the clean side first. Here.
Now, that's both pickups, right?
Is that both?
That's both, yeah.
Okay. That's nice.
Here's just the front.
Same guitar that was just blowing out moments ago.
It's really nice.
Just cleans them beautifully.
It's in between.
That's a sweet.
That's in between. Can you add a little grit to that sound now just to hear that middle position sound? There's some nice stuff to be had there in that middle.
Now he's using both pickups right now.
It's both, yeah.
Now that's okay. Go back to I'm curious. Roll off the contour while you're playing both pickups. Does it make it sound more out of phasey, or does it? It gives it a little more character. Yeah, gives you a little more character in that. There it is with it.
You can hear it roll in, right? Actually, cleans it up a little.
Cleans it up. Because it's not overdriving the bottom.
Can I remember that lick?
That's with both pickups. That's a very
P90
nice.
Adds to that really nice slap. It's mixing kind of a single coily slap with the humbucker.
Well, with that double setup with the thing rolled off so it's a little cleaner, do like a funk groove because that really gets you that sound.
Let's see. I've got to figure out where it's at here.
Yeah.
So that's it's all live, folks.
JP came on and he was using the E-Sider with his. What amp is that?
What the hell is it?
it's an old custom craft. So when you said Valco, we're thinking Supra, we're thinking. This is a custom craft Supersonic from the mid 60s. It's a 20 watt amp. And we want to blow it out here, but with respect to the radio show.
There's another one right next door.
We're not blowing it out, but it is one of my favorite amps. And when you begin to get into that, 15, 20 watt range, this amp just screams. And I wanted to have something that sounded nice next to the Kemper, so I got this. And it's a cool sound.
That contour thing is a really, that thing is very hip because he's getting that, you can dial and spank and a little bit of meat.
Yeah.
And part of that funk sound, the amp did break up a little bit, so you can control it. That's a very cool thing.
And it's at this point, too, that we do want to let everybody know because Ken probably won't do it or say it himself. So with all the innovations and everything that happened, the Billy Corgan signature model that was most of these are Carina bodies, right? And in that case, that one's chambered,
yes.
Right?
Everything we do is Carina, yes.
So that one, Best in Show Award at NAMM last year. This year,
yep.
The Double Agent 20th Anniversary is an editor's pick. Mm-hmm. At Guitar Center, oh my God, Guitar Player. Clearly, there's some innovative and interesting stuff, which goes back to the notion of you can be a traditionalist. Like one of the things, Jeffrey's going to play this Telecaster in just a second, and like half the people I say, for the E-Sider, half the people will say, well, you know, the Telecaster's got to have the barrels or it's just not right.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, I really want it to intonate right and I want it to be just right, and this E-Sider is just perfect for that. So is it true? Is it cosmetic? Is it the holder? It's hard to tell. All I know is when I play the E-Sider, it sounds like a Tele. It feels like that, like a traditional Fender Telecaster. And and it just sounds great. So there you get into the whole purist versus innovation versus moving forward.
Well, it's funny you're saying that because, I mean, like my Les Paul, which I got was 71. I modified it. It wasn't right. I had to make it right. And once I did do that, it was great. I mean, it played great. But it's funny because, yeah, everybody thinks they're like magic and stuff. But a lot of times back then being there, we had to fix them all the time. Almost all my guitars have been modified in one way or another. And these guitars, you don't need to do that. This Double Agent, what I'm really impressed about, with a humbucker and with the P90, it's a quite versatile instrument. I mean, in terms of styles, which I think Jeffrey, the demands on him as a session player, that's a very important thing. That thing can handle pretty much anything.
And actually now to move slightly off of the technical side, the price point for these, Ken, is something that should be shared with people because we may be talking, oh, these are esoteric, they're chambered, they're Carina, they're special pickups. How much?
No, everything we do is priced between $799 and $1499, with the vast majority of stuff being, you know, at the $999 price range.
So everything we're talking about is summarily affordable to the average guitarist that is, gigging and out there playing. So there's some real innovation that can be had here for not a whole heck of a lot of money.
Right, and it's a work. Yeah. It's a workhorse. It's made to it's ruggedly
built. That's exactly right. A couple of the things that the workhorse is funny that you would say that because we actually did it. Joe did a workhorse series for a few minutes many years ago. But one of the things that Joe that was very, very important to him in designing the original guitar and to designing all the guitars that we're doing now is if we have a lot of guys that tour all over the planet with our instruments all the time. And God forbid, you know, somebody's on the road and their stuff gets stolen. This happened with us with a touring punk band called You Blew It a couple years ago. They're in Texas. Somebody steals their trailer. They still have, 40 shows to go on this run that they're doing.
Yeah.
We send them another charger. They pick up and go. The dude's happy. When the Stooges got all their stuff sold in Toronto, Ron calls. We send him another one of his SIG models. It's done. You know what I mean? We don't make special versions for the guys who are out on the road or for pro guys like JP. You know, I didn't send him something. When he wanted an E-Sider, we didn't we have to make him a special E-Sider. He's a player. No, I mean, that's what we do. And then the components of the guitars are equally as important. We didn't want to make anything that had a bunch of, proprietary, goofy pieces on it. I mean, the stuff right down to it's all good stuff. You know, like the Wilkinson is really, really good stuff. But you can get a replacement Wilkinson Trem if you break something. I haven't had anybody break one in 15 years, but you could. Our Pinlock tuners are sized normal. You can grab a tuner at the guitar store if your guitar falls over and you break a tuner or whatever. You can put something in there while you're waiting for me to send you a replacement, or you can just buy a set of those, or whatever the case may be. The pickups are conventional sized, for all that reason. And then one of the things that I wanted to mention to you really quick, too, because you were talking about the E-Sider, When we do a signature model, we really design these things around the need of the player who we're working on the signature model with. So you mentioned that you were a big fan of Mike Watt. We're doing this thing with Mike Watt. We're releasing a signature bass with him called the Watt Plower at the NAMM show next week.
All right.
And we've been working with Mike on this bass. We've done, I don't know, 3 or 4 rounds of prototypes, maybe a few more, over the last 4 years until we dialed this thing in to be the working bass that he wants to play on stage. And when I approached him about doing a model with him, because I'm a longtime fan too, Minutemen, Firehose. I saw Minutemen in Detroit in 86, and I probably saw Firehose play, you know, 25, 30 times when that band was around. And I love his solo stuff, and of course we got to be around him a lot when he was doing the Stooges thing. When I approached him about working with him on a bass, he said, "Oh, you know, Brother Ken, I love your basses, but, you know, they're not really what I do." And I, no, Mike, the idea is we want to make the bass that fixes all the shortcomings for all the basses that you have. We want to make the bass to your specs that you want to play. And then if your fans want to buy it, they will be buying your thing. And that East Sider model that JP has, that was a culmination of our work with Pete Anderson. You know, Pete Anderson played for Dwight Yoakam for many years and then went on to win a number of Grammys and produce a number of amazing artists like Michelle Schacht and the Meat Puppets and on and on and on. And Little Daw Records is right down the street from where you guys are there in Burbank. And we started, we did a hollow body with Pete first, and then when he wanted to do a solid body, we were originally going to try it on one of our you know, original platforms. And the more we worked on the guitar, the more Pete was like, "Oh, I'm so closely associated with the Telly that I really want to have that body." And Joe really didn't want to do it at first because those are out there, and we make these cool guitars, and we didn't feel like we needed to remake that. But Pete really wanted it, you know, and I knew there was a thing that we could do with it. And so when we talked Joe into it, Joe said, "Fine, I'm going to make the best one of these styles guitars that there is, and I'm really going to get Pete what he's looking for tonal wise." And I mean, so starting with the Carina body, that guitar has a little more mid-range spank than you normally find in an Ash or an Alder.
Yeah, it's starting in a different place because of that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Right? Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
And then it's chambered strategically around the neck joint so that they're all very resonant, but it's completely solid around the bridge, so it still has that spank. And then we made pickups that were reminiscent of the early 50s, large gauge wire Alnico 7 magnets, so that the pickups had a real vintage tone, so that the guitar has sort of a transparent thing going, so that you could hear the wood. You know what I mean? And then just little touches that Pete liked, like a 10 to 14 inch compound radius and individual saddles for the strings, so that the guitar would intonate properly. And you know, and we could do these things. I think a lot of times some of the major brands in this industry get sort of weighted down by their own legacy, and people expect things to be a certain way, and when they vary from that, that can't be any good because that's not the way it was. Well, we don't have that kind of history, so we can approach a guitar like that from a completely different aspect. And so we got, you know, we got Pete this guitar that not only can he do his traditional chicken picking thing with that guitar, but he can get, you know, nasty with it and growling and play some blues and dig into it and really have, you know, kind of a unique, cool take on that style instrument.
That's the thing about him. He comes from the Midwest and has as much, if not more, of a blues background than he has in country or anything else. He's comfortable in a blues roadhouse or in Bakersfield or in, hanging out around Nashville, although he might question that. Eastsiders were so...
He spends more time gigging around your town than he does anywhere else anymore. I mean, you can... If you guys look up Pete online, he plays in really neat little venues all around L.A. and Burbank. And you think he even does, like, a regular Moose Lodge thing somewhere?
He does. Yeah, I've seen him at the Moose Lodge. Yeah.
It's just a blast.
He needs a guitar that's pretty versatile, and this covers so much ground. If we could have a...
let's Jeff take a listen to this really quick and see what it is.
Yeah, please do.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. Classic.
Play the bridge, the neck pickup, and show a little bit of the blues and the jazz, too. I have to admit, the tone of these pickups is just stunning.
Thank you.
And then give us a blowout sound on that so you can see how this guy rocks. Go to the neck pickup and give me a little.
Jeff was mentioning something about liking the neck shape. Is it a soft V on there? What do you feel in the neck, Jeff?
It feels like maybe just a little bit of a soft V as compared to this one. This one is a little bit, but both of them are really comfortable.
Like, they're very fast.
They're really comfortable. As soon as I picked it up, it just felt good in my hands. I didn't feel like I had to get too adjusted to it. I've never played these guitars until tonight, so and they just feel right at home for me.
Ken, is there a compound radius neck on the Shadow Agent as well, or just on the Pete Anderson?
No, the compound radius neck is only on the Eastsider models. Even the Pete Anderson hollow body and the Double Agent and all the other guitars all just have a straight 12-inch radius. Okay. So the 10 to 14 inch is specific to the Eastsider. We're putting the big frets on everything now, though, too, and I think it's so funny because everybody's instinct when they pick up that Eastsider with the big frets and where it flattens out up on the top is just to wail on it a little bit. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And while we still have on the phone, because we're coming to the end, close here, Jamal, are you still with us there?
I am still with you.
Could you talk a little bit about the 12-string with the P90s? What is that? Now, Jamal, he's got the this Double Agent. He got a Space Hawk, the really cool Reeves Gabrels signature. And then the 12-string.
I got the last gold one that has kind of some, glittery sparkles embedded in it for the Reeves.
How perfect.
Space Hawk.
How ideal.
Which I also dig.
How do you like the... What do you like about... What speaks to you about these guitars?
Just that they're unique. I'm always looking for something that's different. You were talking about some guitarists don't like change, but I'm always looking for things that are like, oh, that's an interesting something, so where I can tweak, because I'm definitely a tweaker and a sonic landscaper, so
absolutely.
There's lots of different things I can do with these, and I'm a big 12. I play 12 strings acoustics, and this electric, I've had a Rickenbacker for a long time, but I just don't play it that much, even though I like it because of what it is, but it doesn't stay in tune and the neck's weird on it. But the Reverend 12 string stays in tune really well. It plays, even like not plugged in, it sounds great. And the cord, it's super chimey. You can get that really psychedelic sound, but
well, you've also got P90s on
as
it, too,
well.
in both positions, and that must lend itself very well. Kudos, it's an amazing soundscape that you create with that band, and so it must take reasonably well to pedals and to your unique setup with the California Blondes and all the shimmering stuff. So that's a testament to
yes,
because you're getting that
shimmery large chords.
You're looking for clarity, but also the wash. And we kind of laughed at that a little bit, but it is so important to be able to generate that. So you just had to have a wash of nothing. The notes still ring out.
Yeah,
and Jamal,
I grew up listening to. Yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to ask you: you were talking about the Rickenbacker, and that Rickenbacker twang is a unique thing. Can you get that sound out of the P90s? And I presume that has the contour too, so that you can you could tweak
it. Yeah, it's got the bass contour as well, which is
so,
really.
But will it get that sound, you know, that kind of twangy, Ricky, like, you know, like the Beatles? The Beatles would get and stuff like that. So you can get that sound out of it. That's very cool.
Yeah, you can get that too. But, you know, but I'm always adding. I mean, I'm very influenced by The Edge and by Sonic Youth and, you know, the guys from The Church and stuff like that. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. you know, and so I, you know, I use definitely lots of delays and reverbs and with distortion as well. So I can just get, it just sounds really large.
My hudos to
and
Valentine.
Enveloping.
No, that's cool.
When we started with the 12 string, we started with a blank slate. The intention wasn't just to slap a 12 string and neck on something that we already do. And so Joe took one of our semi hollow models and extended the upper horn so it would balance well. But then we put 12 locking tuners on a guitar and went 1 3/4 at the nut so that it was comfortable for people to play chords and even guys with big yam hands like myself. And it's got a really neat bridge, a really neat Godo bridge where 6 of the strings go through the body and 6 of the strings top load. And nice. You can intonate all 12 of the strings. And the guitar's got a Carina body, but it has a solid spruce top. And it's that spruce top that gives it that sort of acoustic zing that you hear. And again, with the bass contour control, you can sort of dial back some of that lower mid-range bump that the P90s have, and really let some of that acoustic zing come through the guitar. It's really versatile. And yeah, like Jamal said, I mean, it tunes up well, and then it stays in tune. So you've got the, you know, it's really... really cool idea, and it seems to be catching on. It's one of those things like sometimes when a company launches a guitar, you initially sell a whole bunch of them, and then it sort of tapers off. You know what I mean? Is the next big thing comes out or whatever. Well, you launch the next big thing, and you take the focus off of something that you did last year by doing something new this year or whatever. And with both our Descent baritone and the Airwave 12-string, since their launch, the sales have steadily gotten bigger as sort of word gets out. And I think that's really cool. I think it's really neat to have guitars like a baritone and a 12-string that are good like that, because that's not something that everybody has. And you offer a really good one at an affordable price, and it's something that even, like, you know, your diehard Les Paul guy or whatever, you know, would be like, you know what, I could use a 12-string for this and that. And so it sort of, you know, opens up markets for us, I think. And gets people used to the brand and seeing the brand out there. And so, yeah, we're really happy with it. And I think it's great that, you know, Jamal is getting so much use out of it and hearing what he's able to do with it with all of his spatial effects. You know, it really sounds cool. It's definitely something to aspire to.
Yeah, well, I definitely am going to go check that at NAMM.
It sounds good distorted as well, actually.
That's cool.
Heck yeah.
They're switching.
So are you guys all going to the NAMM show?
Yes. Where can people see that? Do you know what booth number you're going to be? Well, yeah. I'm going to miss you, my friend.
Jamal's here in Kentucky. You can hop in the trunk, Jamal. We can throw you the bag of the train.
And when you come to L.A., you have to come and hang with us over here on the show, Jamal. That's a given.
Yes. We're hoping to be out there this summer, actually.
Oh, okay. That sounds
great.
Yes,
we're going to try to coordinate some Incendio shows, as we have done in the past.
Oh, okay. Well, let me know. As soon as you know and you guys are booked dates, let's get him on the show.
You can count on it. They're an amazing band.
Yeah. But do you know your booth number?
We're in the back of the B Hall in booth 5793 for all the NAMM goers. If you want to come by, we're also welcoming Carr Amplifiers into our booth this year, and Steve Carr and I have been good friends for a long time, and he makes some amazing amps. He's out of Pittsboro, North Carolina. He's a really neat guy, so his stuff will be hanging around too, and we'll have different Railhammer guitars on display, and we're going to have about 50 Reverends hanging out. And also in the L.A. area, you can check us out at there's a relatively new guitar store called the Fretted Frog.
Oh, very cool.
That is doing really, really well with us. I'm not sure exactly where they're at. I should have done my homework on them a little bit better before I got here. But if you look up Fretted Frog online in L.A., are you guys familiar with them at all?
I've heard the name.
I've heard the name, too. I haven't been there yet. But I'll look it up and I'll post it on the when I post the pictures and stuff.
I would also like to tell Ken that when you said Naylor amp for me, but I think for all of us, the light went on. We're like, oh, that guy Naylor. I hadn't made the association before, so that does definitely bring. You remember those?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. For sure.
So brought it full circle.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, everybody, I want to thank both of you guys. I know it's late up there for you back east, but thank you, Ken and Jamal, for being on the show. And at
thank
some
you
point,
for having
I
us.
Do want to have you in studio. That's one thing I do want to have you guys here. Everybody, check out reverendguitars.com. And Jamal is on, it's Hudos.com.
Hudos.com. You can check him out on Facebook as well. It is Jamal and Moksha and a host of musicians that they play with. Amazing alternative world music. Is that about right, Jamal?
Something we call like it neo-folk world rock.
There you go. That works.
But, you know.
So check them out on Hudos.com.
It's all over the map.
Bunch of stuff on YouTube, and they're awesome.
And then, JP, give us an update of what you're doing, what's going on with you.
Incendia just did their first show of the year. We rocked the Temecula Theater, and now Carbe and Durand have a number of shows together, including this Thursday in Newhall and Saturday Newhall. And then next, at the end of the month, the 28th, a show with actually Christy Lenny, who's a member, occasional member of Hudost, and with Janet Robin, with whom Lisa used to be in Lindsay Buckingham's band. We're going to be all back together at Genghis Cohen starting at 7 o'clock on Saturday the 28th. So it's a full dance card for January.
Wow. And then, Jeffrey, what's
up? You didn't even tell me that. I had no idea you were playing
it just
with
happened.
Her.
Surprise,
it just happened.
Surprise. And then, Jeffrey, what's up with you?
Well, I'm trying to think. I have I've been playing with a cat named Lau Tizer, a very good friend of both me and JP, and kind of a world jazz. We're playing at Spaghettini's, I believe, on the 28th, January 28th. And my blues band, Bleeding Harp, H-A-R-P, by the way.
H-A-R-P.
We are currently on the final stretch of our next EP recording that we're getting
ready very
to release.
Cool. So. Oh, you got to let me know when that comes out. That's an excuse to have you come on.
And Jeffrey's an incredible teacher and gives some online lessons on YouTube, and is just a fine player. Bleeding Harp is a screaming band.
JP sits in with us all the time,
and we have a blast. So check out where can they check out your work?
Well, you can go to bleedingharp.com. BLEEDINGHARP.
And you have a website too, Jeffrey Marshall.
Jeffrey Marshall Music.
Yeah, check him out on YouTube. So many just crammed with information. So many YouTube videos crammed with great information.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to have Jeffrey and JP take us out, do a little jam. And thanks again. Ken and Jamal, hang on the line. They're going to fade out, and then there'll be a little bit of silence after we're off the air. I want to talk to you really briefly after the show. Also, too, my guests that are in studio here, Julie Handelman, thank you for coming. And Jim Muskie. I think, Jim Muskie, you need one of these guitars in your future. So there you go.
Next week.
Everybody have a great week. We will see you next week. Here we go. Here's the jam. Good night.
Happy New Year, Happy New Year. We'll be right back.
No.